They zoned us, Sam. The zone. Each week, it's a different challenge. Coaching these girls. Zone. Coaching fail. Sam Ellinger, you should write a column about how terrible of an assistant coach I am. he deserves to be removed. Sam Ellinger from the Kansas City Star joins us in this beautiful studio. It's Monday, April 15th. It's tax day. Is everything done? Are you taxes? You wait till last minute. Everything out the window? You out of here? What's going on?
Usually we are very prompt. I'm talking about like before March 1st. This year, the Mellingers have filed for an extension.
Thank you.
Yep.
So there's no no stress on you today?
No.
Okay.
No. Katie was like, the other day, I got to get my taxes done. Like stressed out. And I'm like, extension. Like, what are we doing here?
You know I get a return, but then you have to send off the checks, you know? And then I feel like I wait too long and then I forget how much I owe. And then on the 15th, because I'm gonna hold on to my money as long as possible. And then on the 15th, when we set it up, I totally. So it's like when I find out, it hurts me, and then I forget about it. And then a month later, I go, why? Yeah. I should just
Gets
do it
twice.
Right, you know?
Yeah.
But that's fine. It is tax day. We want to remind you, so write that check and get it in the mail. Do not fail. As we talk to Sam Ellinger from the Kansas City Star, Sam Ellinger, let's start off with the big story of the weekend, Tiger Woods winning the Masters. Let's hear from your perspective what you thought of the Masters and Tiger Woods once again, the Masters champion.
I thought it was amazing. I didn't watch much of the tournament before yesterday. I probably watched a total of like a half hour maybe. Yesterday I wanted to watch it anyway, and then Sammy Mellinger had a bad for him but good for my Masters watching kind of like a hyperextended toe.
Oh,
I think.
Uh-oh.
That could be very painful.
So yikes.
Very painful.
It was bad.
How did that happen?
But he was just running and tripped and, you know, the toe bent back. It was bad. It was really bad. But the upshot, if there was a bright side, it's that we sat on the couch and watched golf. And
He's five. Did he like it?
Loved it. He was like super into it. And I mean, some of it is like, there's a guy named Tiger wearing a red shirt. And he's playing, you know, he's going against a guy named Francesco, like the, you know, the race car from Cars. That was really good for a five-year-old. But anyway, I mean, I just thought it was an incredible moment. There's not that many. He wasn't a huge underdog. I heard you guys talking. He's 14-1. That was probably inflated or deflated, whichever way you want to talk about, just because of the name. But it's not like shock. It's not the most shocking thing in the world that Tiger Woods wins the Masters, right? Like that's his course. That's what he does. But it was still, 13 years, right? And to see him doing it in some different ways. There were some tee shots where it just looked like he looked like a balding dad, you know? It was like relatable. You know what
oh,
I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like for the first time.
Head off, whatever. In for the hug, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And
that was the best moment.
You know, there were times where, you know, the broadcasters did a good job of pointing this out about, you know, I dabble in golf. I probably golf twice a year. So I'm not, you know, I'm interested enough to know a little bit about it, but not, I don't, you know, the particulars are kind of lost on me sometimes. And, you know, there was a shot, he was in the fairway and his feet were above the ball. And, you know, they were making the point that when you've got a back, three surgeries, right? When you've got, you know, some back stuff going on, that's a particularly hard shot. And you can kind of just see all that stuff happen. You can see, you know, what is it, number 12, where Francesco put it in the water twice and Tiger takes the safe shot. Like little moments like that. It was really cool. I'd imagine that if you were, you know, watching your first golf tournament, a lot of this stuff is lost on you. But I think for people like us that, you know, you have the history, you remember when he was 21 and just the baddest man on the block and he won the Masters by 20 strokes or whatever it was. You know, it was a really cool moment.
And one of the things about those days that Tiger Woods, it seemed like for a while there, he won the mind game
Yeah.
Just by being Tiger Woods. It's like, you know, he had the red shirt on Sunday, and everybody else kind of wilted, and none of these young guys are intimidated by him. None of these young guys are going to collapse because, oh gosh, Tiger Woods is here today. And so he had to kind of win this one in a different way, you know? And Jake and I were talking about that. And again, I am no golf historian, so maybe I'm off on this, but I was really into the round on Saturday. I was listening to the whole thing on the radio while I was doing yard work, and I really enjoyed it. And boy, they just kept talking and talking about how crowded the top of the leaderboard was. There were like double-digit guys within one or two strokes of each other, and they were all just putting up, Finau was putting up eagles and, you know, birdies on every par five. And it's like, boy, Tiger Woods going to have to keep himself just like in the running here on Saturday. It wasn't just one or two guys. It was like 10 guys he had to compete with. And he overcame all those guys at this age to do it. It was really crazy. It was impressive.
One of the other things that sticks out watching that, and again, you have to remember Tiger is the badass, you know, like in his 20s. But when he was that guy, he just looked. He looked like he was the athlete.
Yeah.
He was the only athlete on the course, and it was a lot of like kind of chubby. You know, Phil Mickelson was the big rival.
Guys with dad bods, yeah. You know, Phil Mickelson's got his man boobs and everything out there.
And now, look, I would love to be in as good a shape as Tiger Woods is right now. Like that would be an improvement. But you see, like Koepka, and you see some of these other guys, like, they're just jacked. They're the athletes.
Yeah.
You know, the one guy, Finau, is that how you say his last name? They said he was like the leading rebounder in Utah, like as a high school kid. He's the one going against some of these athletes. The other thing I thought was really cool, I think it was Don Van Natta tweeted out a picture of Tiger after he'd won that first Masters and crying and hugging his dad, who, if I remember right, had a heart attack or stroke. I mean, like, he didn't make it much longer after that, if I remember right. And maybe should, you know, a lot of people didn't think he would be there for that moment. And then the picture of him yesterday and hugging his own kids, you know, who weren't born, at the moment of that first picture. It was just a really cool, you know, he's been through some stuff, man. And it's 1,000,000% like all his doing. So he's got to wear all that, but it was just a cool thing to see him get back to that.
Can I share something with you guys? You mentioned little Sammy, my brother, Derek, D Money Styles, and my nephew, Gavin. He was sending me videos them all weekend, but here's a video, some audio from the video that he sent me yesterday.
Tiger. Let's go, Tiger!
Let's go, Tiger!
Let's go, Tiger! Let's go, Woods! Is that what you say?
Let's go, Woods!
Let's go, Woods.
Let's go, Tiger of the Woods!
Let's go, Tiger of the Woods! Oh!
Oh! Bad hit!
Bad hit?
Yeah.
And how old is he?
That's awesome.
Four.
That's great.
Four.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, it's something that, you know, I'm sure you'll never forget sharing that moment with little Sammy. And
but that's what it's all about. I
mean, right.
And that's what it's so cool because, again, we're talking about the best moment was watching him hug his son and then seeing the footage of him hugging his dad when he first won the Masters. And here you are with your son and your brother with his son. And, they had it on at breakfast. Where we were, well, it was kind of a brunch deal after the girls had their game, and my son had his, and this is 100% true, since we're sharing these heartfelt stories, my son Phil had his back to the TV because he was eating what was called a lumberjack breakfast off the menu.
Good for him.
And I said, you should turn around and see this moment. if it wasn't on his phone or on that plate, he was not going to see it. But he was sitting across the table from me, and so he was at least in my vicinity.
There you go.
And so perhaps you will hear that. You will get that from little Sammy when he's 15 and refusing to acknowledge you across the table from you. But we were together.
There you go.
When it happened, so you know I was emotional, and he was going, "Do you think they have more syrup?" Like, yeah. Yes, they do.
I bet they can get you some more.
Yeah, it's a restaurant, Philly. I bet you we can get you some more.
I was just
they'll eat it up too.
I'm just sitting here thinking about it. Having your dad be proud of you is a terrific feeling. Like it.
What's
you know,
it like?
Your dad, you joke, but your dad's incredibly proud
deep,
of you.
Dark feelings. Yeah, it just happened within the last couple of weeks that I was like, oh, hey.
It took a while. Your dad's incredibly proud of you.
Yeah, last month when you won the spotlight.
Right, finally. Yeah.
Like, finally, like, you know what? Finally, you make me proud, son.
No, he goes, hey, you know what? I'm not embarrassed anymore.
Not bad.
Yeah, hey,
not
I'm actually
bad.
Willing to admit that you share my name.
Thank you.
But no, your dad's incredibly proud of you. It feels good. Like, it feels good to have your parents be proud of you, but it feels awesome to have your kids be proud of you. I feel
that's
like
a different deal, man,
that's at
it?
A different level. And I know we're totally joking about this, but I was joking earlier this, just like Tiger Woods did the first time I won the hot dog race, my kids weren't even alive. But this time around, they were there in person to witness it. Right. And like the excitement on my daughter's face when I came back up to the seats and she just ran up and jumped into my arms because I had won the hot dog race, like, that's a hell of a feeling. Like, my daughter's proud of me for a change, you know? She has to go to school and get yelled at by other kids on the playground because their dad, you know, because her dad's an a-hole.
The
stuff
ultimate
like that.
Redemption story.
So she was actually proud of me for a day, and it was like, wow, this feels great. So Tiger Woods, that had to feel awesome for him, even better than his dad hugging him to hug his son. That's way better.
You can relate. I love it.
Yeah, same thing, right?
Did you win or did Hartzell lose?
It doesn't matter.
Okay,
I mean, same thing. That's again. I go back to the story in life, kids. Is sometimes you just got to hang in there till the person in front of you falls on their face, and that could be the story of your success. You know,
you could
again.
Also...
It is the story of my success
right.
here at Sports Radio 810. I waited patiently for people ahead of me to to fall on their face, and thankfully. Thankfully,
he'd
for
be
me,
there
they
to
did.
Take advantage
selfishly
of
for me. They did. Thank
right.
you.
Right.
You could also frame this. I'd be surprised if you haven't already. We were just talking about Tiger. You know, he like stares down his competition, like when he was in his 20s and waited for them to fail.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
The guy, maybe
old Relish
was like, yeah. Maybe old Relish was feeling it.
Hartzell was definitely feeling the pressure. He told me afterwards because he said he was going for the record. He felt like as a former college sprinter, he needed to set the all-time record. He was asking beforehand about what the record was and everything, and he got himself going a little too fast.
He wasn't even concerned about winning.
No, he wasn't. He was worried about the record. He didn't think there was any chance he could lose, and he fell.
Literally one step.
I can't
believe one step.
I can't even put into perspective for you the thought, like what was going through my mind as I saw him just face plant right
you know what,
in front of the finish line.
You know, here we were crushing what appeared to be the lack of athleticism from Sam McDowell.
Right.
Did he actually win the race? Because Hartzell fell down and you cheated with a false start, so did Sam McDowell actually win?
Oh,
if we're going to sit here and crush Hartzell for falling face first.
Yeah.
But if you really did false start and that was illegal, then didn't Sam McDowell win?
Well, I think I was declared the winner. So the
well, but I'm asking you
I was
now,
accused of a false start, but I don't think anybody
Sam,
can prove it.
I'll talk to you then. Was it a false start?
I don't know.
Okay, he left
I'm not
early.
Here to be the judge
so
of that.
So then, Sam, is this maybe Sam McDowell's victory that we're just ignoring?
Well, I have to admit something to you guys right now.
Please.
I'm big on, you know, you can have biases, but just be clear about them. We've talked about this on and off the air, guys.
Yeah.
I have a bias here. Once upon a time, I, too, was a hot dog derby champion.
Right.
Right.
And I, too.
Which means you're always a champion.
Yes.
You're forever a champion.
And I, too, was, you know, dealt with the negative energy from others of, you know, accusing improper
You were accused
techniques.
Of cheating.
Who made the accusation?
So I stand with Nate.
Ryan Lefevre.
Ryan Lefevre.
He's above reproach. Sorry.
Yeah.
If it's me making the accusations, fine. That's Ryan Lefevre.
He's an honest man.
That's the eye in the sky.
He also really accused me of lining up a Jayhawk fan to put a tripwire in front of Hartzell at the finish line.
It may be. But I just feel like if it's me or Jake, absolutely.
Right.
Right.
I really thought I was going to come in here today
but
and
Ryan
Jake
Lefevre
was going to tell
make
me.
A good point.
Yeah.
Ryan, Ryan's
well,
a hell of
like
a character.
That's like a judge right there. Like, you know, the honorable Ryan Lefevre.
Yeah,
I feel
right.
like you don't. You don't question what he says. You say, okay, well.
I will say that it does hurt a little bit more, but I think Ryan's still bitter because I beat him in a foot race in Montreal 15 years ago.
Wow, that's true.
And he's trying to take away, you know, some of my credit.
Some jealousy.
Yeah, yeah, a little player hatred from Ryan, which I thought Ryan would really be above that because Ryan usually is above, you know, all the sophomoric silliness on our show. I really thought I'd come in here today and Jake would be completely discrediting my win.
Not today.
I really thought
that not today. I'll wait till tomorrow.
This is throwing me for a loop. I was ready.
Well,
for
you won, but I didn't know about
the redemption story.
Yeah, I didn't know about the false starting. Jake was going to accuse me of false starting. He was going to accuse me of paying off Hartzell. He was going to say Hartzell crossed the finish line, which some people have tried to allege.
I'm gonna actually text Hartzell and see if you paid him. He'll tell me.
Can we have him on? I know he works at another radio station.
I don't probably feel like not. It, considering he does a morning show.
Yeah, probably not.
His morning show?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't realize he did. I thought you did the nighttime thing.
You know what?
I thought you did the nighttime.
Maybe you know what? You know what probably gave it away.
What?
When we introduced him as the morning show host at 96.5 on stage.
At, yeah, right, yeah.
I was there for that.
Yeah.
Partially.
You were standing right next to me when I congratulated him on his movie the morning.
Well, I was obviously thinking about something else.
Yourself?
Hey, see if he's free anyway. Call him up.
Yeah, I'll give him a holler.
I mean, they play music over there. He's got time. I guarantee he can come on. You want me to text him?
No,
I don't.
Not really.
Because I don't want you to, because I'm going to text him with real questions that need to be answered. Not your text.
Yeah.
Hey, they're going to ask you about the money I gave you. Tell them no.
No money.
You text him.
I'll cancel that check. If you tell him about it, I'll cancel that check.
And you to take a dive.
No, man. Nate, I'm
that
proud
was
of you.
A great moment.
He claims that he
I'm
was
proud
going,
of you, Nate.
He was going for the record. Are you proud of me?
I am.
Thank you, buddy.
I am. I thought you had no chance in hell.
Dude. I did too. But I didn't give up.
Right.
Very simple, to the point. You can be
the witness.
You're an investigative reporter at times, so tell me if this is
straight.
Did Nate pay you to take a dive? Tell me the truth now. Is that enough or
Sam and I were conspiring, talking about the possibility of trying to trip him or something like that, but
Sam McDowell?
Yeah. But as Atticus Finch said in To Kill a Mockingbird, simply because we were licked 100 years before we started is no reason for us not to try to win.
There it is.
Wow.
There it is.
And I knew I was Atticus. Licked before that race ever started, but I still tried to win.
Boy, lucky you.
Guess what I did?
Throw the glass at him.
You got it. Hey, you pay attention. Would you like to produce the show? To help me?
People were laughing because I couldn't see out of my hot dog hole, too.
You
kept saying
I did see, like, after you did, and I have to admit, I thought it was a dab. But after
Dan,
you did
thought
that,
it was a dab, too?
I did.
Dick,
in
real time,
I did.
Sports columnist for the Kansas City Stars.
I know, it's a Bolt. Usain Bolt.
Greatest sprinter of all time.
This isn't helping you that he's the one that's backing you up. We're the ones that didn't know it was. Yeah. This isn't helping you.
I hate this.
Stop going back to him.
Because I was listening on the way, like, I heard you say, and I was, oh, right, of course, Usain Bolt. Like, But in the moment, I thought it was a dab. But
everybody does.
So you kind of pull down the...
I could have had to pull the mask.
You both, you're like running one hand, like,
I could not see a damn thing running in that costume. Being short sucks.
Sam Ellinger is in studio with us. While we're chatting about the Royals, let's finish strong with a little Royals talk. So I made the point earlier, we could have done this before then. Didn't need to see him have 10 strikeouts and give up one run in the start over the weekend against the White Sox. But in many, many times in the past, when the Royals have had their number one starter or their ace, he wasn't really a number one starter. He was just, by default. Like when Zach Greinke was here, that's a number one starter. That was an ace. Kevin Napier, that was, we've seen him. We know the difference. Mm-hmm. Brad Keller elevated to being the best starting pitcher last year. He started opening day, but you could easily make the argument, who else are they going to pick? Duffy's not ready. Well, I mean, that's an easy choice. But he's just not pitching like the Royals' number one starter or the Royals' ace. He's pitching like a Major League Baseball number one starter, like a real true ace. And I don't know how long he's going to have to do this before people outside of Kansas City, and I don't really care anyway because he doesn't get hardly any love. And can you imagine if he was in L.A. or New York or wherever else, or Boston, blowing up like this as a Rule 5 guy? But damn it, that kid right now is a full-fledged number one starter in Major League Baseball.
He's absolutely one of the best 30 pitchers in baseball, starting pitchers. He's probably one of the best 15. It's a weird, this is an argument that can go on forever in baseball about, like, who's an ace, right? Like, on one extreme, I used to have, maybe you guys did too, I used to have this argument with Andy McCullough all the time. And his,
he disagreed with something that's shocking.
His list of aces, it was like Kershaw, Koufax, Gibson, and that was it. Like nobody else in the history of baseball. But he is a legitimate, and look, I want to see him do it a little bit longer. He's walking more guys than you'd like. You know, there's little things, but he is, I'll tell you this, like he's the kind of guy that they should sign long term.
Yes.
And do it yesterday.
And look, I mean, look at all these comparable contracts to young pitchers and young players that's happening right now. Absolutely.
Because, I mean, he's got everything. He's got the body, like he's, you know, it's a big frame.
They call him a hoss.
He's throwing mid-90s. I believe that he's going to get better. Like, well, right now, what he's basically doing is he's throwing the fastball, you know, sort of to a right-handed hitter, you know, kind of up and in, and then the slider is going down and away. And that's the guessing game. Is it fastball or slider? You know, take your pick. But as he works on that changeup, you know, as he, you know, sort of develops some more pitches and a little bit better feel, I think he's going to be I've been fooled before, he is really good. And he's got, like, one of the other reasons I believe in him is he's got the stuff behind it. And I shouldn't use that word stuff because he's got, like, the character behind it. He works hard as hell. He is one of the most liked, you know, respected guys in that clubhouse already.
Mike Boddicker loves his demeanor on the mound.
Yes. I mean, he's a competitor. He's just an A-plus teammate. Great attitude. I mean, he's got the stuff behind it, too, that makes you feel like this could be a lasting thing.
His walks are elevated, but last year he only had 96 strikeouts in 140 innings. Yep. His walks have gone up, but he has 23 strikeouts in 25 innings, so nearly a strikeout an inning. And now, and like you said, we want to see him do it for a longer stretch of time, but just for what he's done now, if you combine last year and this year, in 166 innings, he has a sub-3 ERA in a Royals uniform. Mm. He has a 2.98 ERA.
Mm.
Do you realize that, Jakey? Look, Jake just took a big drink of some weird green shake.
I did not realize that.
That's good. Wow.
But I do realize how good he's pitching this year because he is a permanent fixture on Team Pounders.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
It's wonderful. But I mean, seriously, since he's been in a Royals uniform, he has a sub-3 ERA.
It's an unbelievable story. I mean, the fact that where was he 2 years ago?
He's a Rule 5 pick, and now he's the Royals' ace, and he's pitching like it.
Good move, Dayton.
Imagine being the Diamondbacks and just letting that walk.
And having no idea what your color scheme is as a team.
Wow.
So here's, I just looked this up.
That's my biggest pet peeve with the Diamondbacks. Thank you.
The color scheme.
What colors are they?
Black, gold, and red.
And sometimes blue, and sometimes yellow, sometimes kind of an orangish thing.
Black, gold, and red.
I think I saw this graphic on TV, which is why it jogged my mind. But you just said, like, from the beginning of last year, 2.98 ERA is 12th in baseball. I did the minimum 160 innings.
I'll take it. That's sign me up.
Pretty damn good. I mean, that's ahead of, you know, Corbin, Kluber, Syndergaard, Bumgarner, Greinke.
Look at Jake's face now. This is just dawning on him. He's just thrilled with this. Are you a believer? Are you a Jorge Lopez truther?
So hold on. The truther would be
that he will be a member of this rotation moving forward.
I don't. I'm not ready to say that. I'm not ready to say he is or is not.
Jury's still out.
I just want to see him. He's inconsistent to me. There's times he's great. You know, he's been mostly good so far this year. But he's been, I want to see it more than, three starts, right? Mm-hmm. I just want to see it more than that.
What's your gut tell you? I mean, do you have a gut when you watch him? Do you have a feel for?
Yeah, if you know, gun to my head, I have to guess.
Easy there.
You know, let's raise the stakes.
Squirt gun.
I feel like he could be a 5. That would be my guess.
But if you find that out, and you have a solid fifth starter moving forward, that's something.
That's great.
You're hoping you got your 2s and 3s and guys coming up and Brady Singer and, you know, and all the other guys that they drafted last year. So
yeah, look, I know they're still 5-10 right overall. The bullpen stinks, all that stuff. But if you take a don't care about the wins right now. They're not good enough to be judged on wins and losses yet. We're judging by pieces. they've got some stuff coming. You know, like they've got a potential one that they found, you know, off the scrap heap, right, Nate? You know, Jorge Lopez, some of these other guys could be, you know, fill in the back of the rotation. They've got an absolute stud at shortstop. You know, a guy that you can really build around and win because of, that can win you a game every way possible that there is to win a game. You know, they've got, my point is that they've got, the record stinks.
And Whit Merrifield's a star.
Yes, yes. And like, keeps getting better. You know, like, if you look at the age curve and all that stuff, you know, he shouldn't be doing this. Like, he should be fading a little bit. But you watch it, and there's nothing fluky about the way that he plays. And his value is escalated even more because what you do when you're trying to rebuild, you just get as many prospects as you can and you bring them up, and some will hit and some won't, and it's unpredictable. Whit Merrifield is a great guy to have in that situation, because if Nicky Lopez hits, then he can play second and Whit can go play the outfield, or he can play third or whatever. You know, if he doesn't, then Whit plays second. There's just some versatility there that I think is super valuable and is going to help them in the near future.
That's Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star, back after this with more on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Sam Mellinger in studio. Thank you so much for listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB today. Sam, did you see the fan at the Sporting Kansas City match?
Oh my God.
Get drilled in the face. And Nate said, we think that, I mean, you know, obviously he had a bloody face and received some medical attention, but he stayed for the rest of the match. And we don't think anything. I mean, who knows, but
I believe he's going to be okay.
Right. But, I mean, you think he's going to be suspended?
Oh yeah. I mean, he got a red card, so that's a mandatory one-game suspension, but I got to think the league's going to hand down.
He's got to get more than that.
Yeah, the longest suspension in MLS history, I believe, is a 10-game suspension for a guy that made just a horrible tackle that broke a player's leg in half and, you know, ended the guy's career. He got a 10-game suspension for that. I don't know what, you know, how far the league goes on this one. You know, a couple years ago, Tim Howard grabbed a Sporting fan by the necktie and yanked him down and slapped a beer out of his hand.
Why is Jake smiling right now?
So, and I can't remember. I think he got like 3 games or something. That's off the top of my head. So I don't know. This one, I mean, you know, Tim Howard in that one, you know, claimed that he was provoked by the fan and all that. So there was a little bit of gray area. This one was completely unprovoked. I mean, I talked to some of the players. They thought that Kaku was trying to kick the ball as hard as he could into the signage board, and he just, you know, he mishit it, and I mean, he crushed it right into a fan's face. So whether it was intentional or not, I guess nobody can really know, but it's incredibly reckless and in danger. I mean, he could have really messed somebody up. I mean, he hit the fan hard, and he was, like I say, he was bleeding profusely, and but, you know, could have been a lot worse, really.
I assume that that's what happened, that he was trying to hit the the ad board, but he's got to go for a long time, I think. Or, you know, the other possibility would be that he was trying to kick it way up in the stands for some dumb reason, but I don't think he was trying to hit that fan in the face. I think we would all agree on that, but you just can't.
But if he was, hell of a shot.
He didn't, right. He didn't seem to show much remorse either, which a lot of people had a problem with. You know, he was kind of like, you know, laughing when he got the red card. He's kind of applauding to the fans on his way off the field.
And the goalkeeper said, "They guess that's the price of sitting in the front row."
I interpreted his walk differently, and maybe I'm by myself here, but I thought he was like you said, dismissing it. He kind of waved his hands like, ah, what a joke. Like, they're kicking me out for this. But it looked to me, and I was just watching on the broadcast, you were there, but like as he was walking, it began to set in a little bit. And he was like wiping his face a little. It looked like it got to him at some point. Maybe I'm reading something into it that wasn't there, but that's what I saw. And I thought that the thing with the fans was sort of like sorry.
Yeah.
Like that was the move that he was making. And maybe I'm giving him too much credit, but that's what it looked like to me. But again, all that said, he's got to go for 5, I don't know, a lot. You can't be kicking the ball.
Yeah. You have to just set an example, right? Probably for the league that, hey, we take the safety of our fans seriously, and you can't do something that's going to endanger the safety of the fans.
Fan probably paid $100 for that ticket or something. I don't know
Probably, yeah.
You know, and that's not the first or last game, maybe the last. It's not the first game that that guy's been to, probably. And you know, like, I mean, that's a fan. Like, you got to protect those people.
Yeah. And
it's awful.
And to be fair, a lot of the Red Bulls players went over after the game and checked on him and shook hands with him and, you know, expressed their, you know, regret that the thing had happened. And Andre Fontas came over and gave him a jersey and all that. I mean,
quite literally the least they could do.
Right. And like you said, I mean, I don't know Kaku at all. He's been a bit of a malcontent with the Red Bulls this year because he wants to transfer to another team in another league. And he's been kind of pouty and grousey on social media and things like that. But I don't think that I can't imagine he intentionally did what he did. Yeah. But that doesn't excuse it. I mean, if you drive recklessly, you might not intentionally be endangering people, but you're driving recklessly. Mm-hmm. So it's still, you know, there's a punishment there, and I think that's what the league. It'll be interesting to see. I would assume this week we'll have an answer from what's going to happen to him. But it's too bad. It was a really exciting game at you know,
Lord Varies.
Oh,
book Lord Varies for 9:30, please.
That's Todd Lebo for those that don't know who Steven's talking about, right?
Who? Okay. Next topic, ready? I'm just going to throw a name out there, and I'd like to hear reactions from, because I haven't heard these two guys talk about this. Devon Dotson.
Yeah.
Your reaction to him testing the waters of the NBA draft.
It's what he should do. Like, there's no downside to what he's doing.
Do you think he'll go? No. What do you think the feedback will be?
I think the feedback will be very low second round, if at all.
Oh.
You know, and I think he'll come back. I think that the NBA, he had a really good year. I think he had a better year than a lot of people believe because the team, you know, the 14, you know, the streak ended. But he had a really, really good year.
Two things I'm just noticing right. Number one, Jake literally only acts interested in the show when you're in studio on Mondays. The 2 hours previous, couldn't get him to interact or respond or pay attention, and I feel like 9 o'clock, and
you know,
pew, right, it's right off the cliff. And so I just wanted to mention because
I only pay attention to the good segment.
But you're talking, and he's in the like.
Yeah, that many of those.
You say something, you write it down, and you know, then it'll be this emoji when he's like this, and you know. And also,
it's my favorite hour of the week thing.
It's just like he's so animated. This is what it sounds like.
Good radio, finally.
And then, Nate, I'd like you. Will you criticize Devon Dotson the way you went after Quentin Grimes? And how are you? How's this sitting with you now?
Well, no, because I think that Devon Dotson's doing what he should do. It seems to be by his statements and everything that he's going for feedback more than anything else. I mean, if the feedback comes back and says, "Yeah, you should go," he'll make that decision. I'm with Sam. I'd be surprised if that's the case. So I kind of expect him to come back.
He's coming back.
I don't blame anybody for finding out. And look, at the end of the day, if it's the right move for Quentin Grimes, if just college is a bad fit, and maybe he thinks the G League is the best place for his next stage of development, who am I to tell him he is wrong in that regard? My only point with Quentin Grimes is I just can't imagine he's going to get drafted. Now, a lot of people have pointed out, you don't have to get drafted for it to be the right move. Wayne Selden, I believe, didn't get drafted, and he's in the NBA now. So, you know, there's a lot of KU fans that look at it and say, oh, Malik Newman was an idiot because he didn't, you know, he's not in the NBA right now. But he played in the G League, and maybe that was the best step for his next stage of development, and maybe that's it with Quentin Grimes. I just don't see, like, my initial reaction when, like, Quentin Grimes goes, I was like, who's going to draft you? You know, I was from a KU perspective, I think, you know, I will say this, like when I was at the Sporting game yesterday, I got stopped by two different people who are KU fans, and the first thing they wanted to talk about is, man, who's going to play for us next year? Yeah. I'm sensing, I don't know if panic is the right word, but incredible stress from KU fans about what their roster is going to look like next year in a way. I haven't heard from KU fans, I don't know about you, Sam, and I can't remember the last time I've heard from KU fans who are this worried about what their team's roster is going to look like in the upcoming year.
Totally warranted. Too, you know, because they've always had roster turnover. There's been Charlie Moore and KJ Lawson that transfer. That's been happening.
But there's always some guy coming in that they're like, oh, but wait till you see this guy play.
Yep. And if the FBI investigation has, you know, kind of turn that spigot off, then
Jake, stop listening to the show now.
Then you know, then that's a problem. That's a major problem. I think that's part of, you know, internally inside that program too, some of the frustration about, you know, where they are right now. Like they just want an outcome. You know, they want a decision made. And because as long as that hangs over,
they're stuck in limbo.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, you know, it's a very different scale, right? But it's similar in the mechanism to what happened at North Carolina when they had that widespread academic fraud investigation, and to which the NCAA said, well, everybody was taking fake classes, so it's no big deal. But when that investigation was going on, North Carolina's recruiting took a big dive. And there were guys, who's the one, Brandon Ingram, I think. Like there've been some top five, top 10 type recruits that have said, I would have gone to North Carolina, but didn't know what was going to happen with this investigation, went to Duke or went to somewhere else. And I think that's what's happening, you know, Kansas. They consistently get these guys, and by all accounts, I know they're in on a guard, right? Like a top 10, maybe a powerful, they're in on a top 10 recruit, but nobody seems to think he's going to come here.
All right, next topic.
Let's do it.
Do you know the NFL draft's right around the corner, sir?
I've heard that.
Might I read a wonderful tweet that has piqued my interest? And I was going to ask you about this because Pro Football Talk tweeted out, there's a lot of speculation that the Seahawks are going to trade young pass rusher Frank Clark. And so some people tweeted to me, there's been some buzz out there that, hey, Brett Veach is clearing some cap space. He's got some draft capital. There's going to be one more big move. There's something big is going to happen, right? And so people sent me a couple of emails. You think the Chiefs might be interested in Frank Clark? And then Honey Badger retweeted the Pro Football Talk tweet. What are the eyes that are looking like? It's the eyeballs are like kind of, you know,
a side view.
Yeah, whatever.
Looking sideways.
I don't know. I use that a lot, but what is that? Like you're, you know.
Yeah, I know.
So then like, wait, Honey Badger, what's that? What's that mean, Honey Badger? Uh-huh. By the way, Honey Badger likes to troll people on Twitter. Just want to throw that out there. But I like it. He's involved. He's in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Daniel Jeremiah, who I respect very much, at Move the Sticks is his handle from NFL Network, just tweeted out, since you've been in the studio, if the Seahawks traded Frank Clark, the Chiefs would make sense as a trade partner. Now talk to me, Sam Ellinger, as I sit back and let it all happen.
I agree. I mean, Frank Clark is a terrifically effective pass rusher. It seems to me, and look, some of this is you don't want to judge the painting before the final stroke, right? Or you don't want to judge the meal until it's all prepared.
That's right.
But it seems so far that the Chiefs are very much of the mind that you can scheme pass rush. You cannot scheme pass coverage. You know, D Ford gone, Justin Houston gone, and they've been really constant. You know, Tyron Matthew, Bashaud Breeland, you know, they're concentrating more on D-backs. I've always thought that their first pick in the draft will be somebody who's going to get after the quarterback. I don't know that they'll be at 29. I think that's maybe where I've always thought that's where the trade might happen, is to get up and get one of these, you know, first-year starter impact, you know, kind of pass rushers, because it's a good draft, or at least this is not me talking. This is I'm repeating the words of people who make their living in this stuff, of making these decisions, you know, and that's been true. I remember last fall having conversations with people and like, ooh, next year's draft, like there's going to be some pass rushers. So that's always seemed to me. But if Frank Clark comes about, you know, obviously the Chiefs GM is willing to make a deal, but I've just always assumed that it would be in the draft.
What would you feel comfortable as far as giving the Seahawks for Frank Clark?
What's his contract?
Well, they would. So here, there's an article at the the News Tribune about this, and so NFL deadline of July 15th to get an extension done with Clark. Last month, the team gave its 25-year-old leading pass rusher the franchise tag for this year. Teams have until July 15th to get a long-term deal done with tagged players. So
it'd be basically a 1 year,
$17 million roughly.
But you know, maybe a acquire them and sign them to a long-term deal. That's what would happen.
I don't know, man. That's basically like the other side of the D-Ford deal. Right?
32 sacks in his last 48 games.
I do think that Clark is better than D-Ford, but you're on the other side of the D-Ford deal where 25, that's young.
I'd give last three seasons.
I'd probably do one of those seconds.
10 sacks, 9 sacks, 13 sacks last year, 25 years old.
Yeah. I'd do one of those seconds. But part of the attraction to me of moving up and making this a draft pick instead of somebody like Frank Clark is the money. You know, that they've got some guys that they need to pay, you know, most notably the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd rather do the draft, but Frank Clark's a hell of a player.
Nate or Jake, thumbs up or thumbs down Frank Clark?
If they do it, I'm gonna turn cartwheels and be excited. Wow. So I shouldn't.
I really hope they do it now.
But I kind of my initial reaction is kind of like Sam. I think they need to line up their salary cap and get young draftable players to produce for them instead of high priced guys they're gonna have to pay top dollar.
Well,
for.
They're in a real, real good spot with the salary cap right now, and even moving forward. Now it's gonna, you know, they're gonna sign Mahomes, they're gonna sign Chris Jones, but I mean they're good. They're out of salary cap hell. Jake.
Yeah, I'm all for it. If you can get a long-term deal that makes sense.
Oh yeah, they're of course that would be part of it.
Right.
But so then what pick would you give up?
I'm with Sam. The second round's probably about where I'd be. I'm not willing to give up first round pick. Nope. No. Negative.
Because I think at that point you can trade that first and one of the seconds and get up to get one of the best pass rushers in this draft.
And are you still of the belief that their first pick, whatever it is going to be a pass rusher?
Yes, that's what I think based on the moves they've done so far. Yeah,
Sam Mellinger, this is one hell of an appearance by you.
I'm glad Jake paid attention.
When you make Jake listen to the show, you've done something wonderful. I've been trying for 15
every week,
years.
Every week, enjoy it, guys. 1 hour a week, I pay attention.
It's Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star. We'll be right back after this on WHB.